I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back. My name is Kit.
My name's Madison.
And I'm Steve.
This is Streaming Things. Today, if you can't tell, we're covering Jurassic World.
What?
Wait a
Jurassic
minute.
Park. I'm just kidding.
I watched the wrong movie.
Jurassic Park, the seminal 1993 classic. Because people made us. It's a demand that was made from one of our beloved patrons.
Alan Tomlinson.
Did they
Shout
know
out.
This was your like in your bloodstream, this movie?
That's why they picked it. Okay. Actually, I'm sorry. For the audio listeners, I'm wearing a dinosaur mask.
He is.
Very restrictive on my face.
Yeah.
Because it's made for children, so I'm taking it off.
Hello, Clarice. That's what it sounded like.
Oh, my God. Life found a way, you guys.
Here
life,
you are.
Finds a way. That's what we heard.
And then creates man.
Finds a way.
Yes. I think Steve just watches this every week anyway, so he just threw it into his rotation.
And you're just listening to the audio.
Yeah, basically my life did not change a single bit this week. I was like, that's Tuesday for me. Jurassic Park?
Yeah. And listeners won't be able to know also that Madison.
Hello.
Is crinkling in a leather coat dressed as.
I am. Mr. Jeff Goldblum.
Mr. Goldblum himself.
Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Ian Malcolm.
Our favorite chaotician.
Or as you guys put it, my everyday attire.
Yeah. I was like, I thought you were dressing up.
Yeah.
What was the phrase you guys said in text? You were saying like...
Oh, I said fair warning for the raw sex appeal that's about to enter the studio.
She wasn't lying. I instantly got pregnant when I walked in.
Yeah, you did.
That was my goal.
I was like, oh my God.
He was like, oh,
always
man.
Looking for the next... Ex-Mrs.
Ex-Mrs. Malcolm.
Yes.
Ex-Mr. I, audio listeners, am dressed like a schlub.
just normal everyday Chris.
I woke up 45 minutes ago, did not shower, and looked around the room, grabbed some things, including Crocs.
You dressed up as the that's a big pile of shit.
The Triceratops shit?
That is one big pile of shit.
Oh, man. That has got to stay on the board.
Yep. That needs to stay.
For movies that we review we don't like, that'll be the entire episode.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of stuff on the board today. I'm just warning you guys.
I bet you're having a good time, and I love that for you.
Thank I
you.
Bet they've thank been you. There for a minute.
And not in the way it's that Gen Z means it. Like, sincerely, I love that for
thank
you.
Thank you. It's kind of wild that back-to-back, so last week we did Inglourious Basterds, which, Kit, you have said is your favorite movie.
Yeah.
And to this week we're doing Jurassic Park, which the older I get, the more comfortable I am in saying Jurassic Park is my favorite movie of all time.
Both are awesome.
Yeah.
Love Inglourious Basterds.
What a great couple weeks.
You know
everyone else
do.
That suggests movies, what are you doing?
Next week, we got to clear the schedule from whatever's planned and review Madison's favorite movie.
Oh.
Which is some obscure pirate porn, I'm sure.
It's rated R.
Rated R. Yeah, I don't know what my I would have to sit on that simmer and think about that.
Mm-hmm. The pirate porn.
Yeah.
Just think about it.
I have a lot in mind. Right
just
now.
Sit on that simmer, baby.
Yeah. There's
so many good
the
ones.
Plank. There's Hook Me. I don't know. You know, so many to choose from.
Hook me.
You hooked me. That's what it's called.
Okay, I liked You Hooked Me better than Hook Me.
Hook me, daddy.
I'm a very simple-minded. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll think. It's like getting a tattoo, picking your favorite movie. You just got to kind of go for it. There's too many options. At a certain point, it becomes ridiculous mathematically. And so you just, you know, A Knight's Tale is what Steve's going through right now, where he's like, I'm old enough to realize it's really Jurassic Park. It really is A Knight's Tale for me. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't sound cool.
Sounds cool.
Well, I appreciate that.
I love A Knight's Tale.
But for, you know, Inglourious Basterds is top 10, easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
I would say my equivalent is probably Django Unchained.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely up there. It's on my top four for Letterboxd.
I love a Django. Oh,
yeah, Django Unchained's fun.
Yeah. If it's on the LBXD.
Oh, yeah. It's serious.
Everyone loves LBXD.
I just made that. It sounded really cool.
It does.
Like sometimes you go for things and they don't pan out. That did.
Oh, well. LBXD. Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
In the total Gen Z way, I love that for you.
I love that.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to start saying that to people.
We forgot something really important last week, and I'm sure everybody's upset and they've been unable to sleep the entire time.
But it didn't make sense for us to announce it then.
That's retroactively, we can say that, but ultimately we both forgot.
Hey, man, don't pull the curtain back and reveal Oz. All right, come on.
No, I don't lie to our listeners. We forgot to announce the winner of the fantasy character draft. And it is, in fact, I would say an upset.
Oh, I don't think that at all, sir.
Madison is the winner.
Yeah.
She put together the best fantasy character.
Your trophy.
Team. Your trophy. Trophy is a Barbasol can filled with dino DNA.
Dino DNA. Now, I'm not going to say anything that a sore loser would say. I'm just going to say...
I think you've already crossed that. I think an upset.
I'm just a nuanced, unbiased reporter on events.
Okay.
And looking at the polls and predictions early on in the game.
I think, honestly, I was just going for my dream smoke circle, and I feel like it resonated with the audience.
Can I just point out, though?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything that a sore loser would say.
Okay.
However, I did predict this in the episode. Let's play it back, Steve. I didn't send you the clip.
Oh, okay.
There is a moment where I say, I bet this time, now that I've pivoted to just picking the most powerful team I possibly can, the winner will be based on the coolest characters, which is what I thought the game was the first time I lost, and I lost to the more powerful characters. And that is exactly what happened.
Well,
because in no universe, Dumbledore by himself would single-handedly wipe out both of your teams. And so it must, you know.
I don't know. I guess she had Hellboy.
She had Selene.
I don't know if that's true. Dumbledore.
Who takes out Dumbledore, Steve?
Dumbledore
walk me through this.
Single-handedly couldn't find his own wand, all right? You know? I mean, he had to get children to fight his battles for him. So I'm just saying.
He's trying to let them grow. He's trying to train them, bro.
That's why you should have made him the mentor.
If he ever gets involved. Have you ever seen the shitty ones? The Fantastic Beast ones?
Now, I will give you Gandalf couldn't possibly. Because Gandalf is a demigod.
Once you throw Gandalf in, and I had people messaging me like, oh, man, I was going to vote for you, but you had the bunny. What the fuck does the bunny have to do with anything? First off, deadly creature. Second off, it's OP already. I just threw a bunny in to
that
just...
That rabbit's dynamite.
To just, well, you know, lighten things up a bit.
Chris, let me say, when I shared, prior to the winners being announced, I shared all of our draft picks with my close friends. And to my surprise, honestly, not surprising, they all drifted to your guys' draft picks versus mine. So
as they
should. You can understand that my friends did not choose mine. So I'm living in the blind victory that is.
I think it was well earned, Madison. I mean, you got the Weasleys, you got Wonder Woman, you got Daemon Targaryen, Toothless. I think you won a lot of hearts and minds with that Toothless pick, honestly. Okay.
All right.
I saw a lot of people mention Toothless specifically, like, oh my gosh, I love him. I learned a valuable lesson is to always go with my heart, not my brain, because I got some people messaging me like, bro, you went with Vhagar, not your big red noodly boy.
Oh man. You were on the fence about it.
You would have got sympathy points for having the noodly boy, for sure.
If I went with my big red noodly boy Caraxes, I think I would have gotten a couple more points.
Right, you gotta think with your big red noodle.
I do. I mean, Madison was thinking with Hellboy's big red noodle.
Yes, I was.
I got a message like the soon as the poll went live from a dear friend of the show, Sydney Volpe. I hope she doesn't mind if I share this. And that's when I knew I was cooked. She said, I have to choose Madison, I fear. But the rabbit of Carabinog just made me so happy. And I said, I'm so stunned at Madison's early lead. They let me get Dumbledore and Gandalf. I was laughing maniacally at my swift victory. And she said, that is OP. And you have Yennefer. Just fully acknowledging the lack of any chance you guys have whatsoever in a battle. Then she said, but she is Hellboy, Wonder Woman, and Brienne, a trifecta I was influenced by.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's going to happen a lot because those are beloved characters.
Madison's
they are,
team
in fact,
is strong.
Voting for cool points. As I feared, I am cooked.
But we can all agree I lost.
All I can say is.
We can all agree.
We can all agree I lost.
All I can say is do better.
Yeah. So the third draft, I'm not going to know what tactic to use.
Hey, while you guys
just
are
wing it.
While you guys are out fighting for domination of first and second place, I'm going to hang back and fuck Geralt of Rivia. All right?
So. I love that for you.
Which way do you mean that?
The best way.
Which generates the millennial way?
The good way.
You can email the show at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Go to patreon.com/streamingthings at any time to check out some extra bonus content. Subscribe at a variety of tiers for access to that. You can even have access to our Discord at a certain tier. Last night we did a little Steve's Fireside Chat without Steve, so I had to rename it. It took me way too long to realize it was obviously going to be named Kit's Fireside Chat. It was embarrassing.
Oh, for a second I thought like, what cool, clever name did you come up with?
No, I was like, what should we call it? There's a low-hanging fruit here somewhere where we just hang out for an hour or two. But there's also bonus episodes. Like you can vote in polls. Can we announce the winner of the October movie poll that we're doing next week now?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we had Vote to be Terrified, right? We had Werewolves Within, which is just funny.
Yeah.
The Empty Man, which is a movie I've actually never seen, but people love. It's supposed to be underrated. Mm-hmm. The Descent, a movie I believe to be the scariest movie of all time. And Hereditary. Everybody knows what that is. Mm-hmm. Hereditary won with 47%, despite protestations from many of the patrons saying, please don't make me watch that again. I would like to sleep in November. So I don't think that's a movie that's that scary from my recollection. It's just very, very good. But I'm excited to revisit it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, please don't make me watch Hereditary again with 3 likes as the first comment.
I'd only seen out of all 4 of those movies, I've only seen The Descent. So I'm excited to watch one that I've not seen.
Oh, I'm so excited to watch Hereditary with you.
You've not seen Hereditary?
No.
Wow. snap.
What was that laugh?
It's so funny that it was voted on a poll to watch that movie, I feel like.
That's okay. Pretty good.
All right.
Pretty good.
Solid.
Let's get into our main review. We're all going to be discussing Jurassic Park. Steve, you look like you're fucking ready to press something. Do it, buddy.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Na, 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 na. I listened to that score, that song, the theme song, twice on the way here.
Oh, that's a good one.
Are you guys familiar with someone taking that audio and putting a, what are those?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those are so good.
There's so many good remixes of that. That song is so good because, you know, obviously it's iconic. It's amazing. People play it at weddings. Like, that's like the bride's coming down to Jurassic Park.
Yeah. The gates are opening and here she comes.
Here she comes.
And running down the aisle because the T-Rex is chasing her.
Yeah, oh, people have like put in heels. Like, have you seen the wedding photos where people are running in a field and they like digitally put in a T-Rex
That's
chasing
awesome.
All of them in their wedding outfits? Mm-hmm. So fun.
So fun.
Life finds a way.
Were you guys able to... So I went to Universal Studios, I think it was 2015, and it's when they had the Jurassic Park ride still. Were you guys able to experience that?
Never been to a Universal or a Disney World or anything like that.
Man.
Never got to experience the ride. I think when I went to Universal, I don't think it was around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I knew that its time was nearing an end, so I was like, well, we got to ride it, you know? And we went on it, and we got stuck. The first time I ever rode it, we got stuck right... There's a moment in the ride where you're going up
the
hill.
You're going up and the raptors are attacking you?
No. And right when before you go down the hill, the T-Rex, like, comes out at you. Well, the thing is, we got stuck right at the top, like, before you go down. So the T-Rex, like, came out, like... Rawr! And then stopped. So we were, like, maybe, like, 2 or 3 feet away from the dinosaur, just, like, mid, like... But they gave us another free ride. So we were just able to like get brought down, put back in line. Yeah. And then we got to go to the front again. But
that's kind of fun. You got a front row seat to really inspect that animatronic yeah. T-Rex.
I was like, all right, it looks good for being a couple years old, you know?
Yeah. My understanding is they redid it and now it's a Jurassic World theme.
It is.
And it's nowhere near as good.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Just like the movie.
Yeah,
I haven't revisited since they've done the Jurassic World rendition, but
that is one big pile of shit.
Yeah, that's I'm sure what a lot of people are saying when they're
hot
there.
Take. I like Jurassic World. It's just obviously not
the first Jurassic World. I agree. I think it's dumb.
Fun. It's fun.
Yeah,
and that's important.
That's the only one I've seen. I haven't seen the sequel.
Yeah,
sequels.
Now the sequels, Fallen Kingdom and Dominion.
I turned Dominion
trash.
Off. I turned Dominion off after like 20 minutes.
It's terrible. Oof. It's so bad.
Which I rarely do.
It's like Dominion, both of them are bad, but Dominion specifically is offensively bad like throughout.
I mean, is it just bad writing, bad story?
Yes,
like,
yes. Yes. Bad effects, bad world building.
Oh,
there's literally a scene in Dominion that is more like a scene from like a bad Star Wars where, you know, you might have not gotten to this, where they get to the dinosaur black market. Where there's just weird characters who are like, it looks like a cantina scene.
Sticks.
Like, hey, we got a compy here. And there's like a guy with a hook in a hand, like, oh, I got my dinosaurs.
Hey, what over here? Get your dinosaurs.
Oh, with a hook for a hand, Madison just perked up.
I know. I said, wait a minute.
Hook me.
Wait a minute.
Where's he at?
Tell me, where's this dinosaur black market?
But what are your guys' thoughts overall on the 1993 Steven Spielberg directed Jurassic Park?
Madison, Jeff,
leave it
Ian.
On. Yeah, leave it to me first. I rated it 5 stars in my Letterboxd.
Yeah,
LBXD.
LBXD, our new word for Letterboxd. I can't remember when I first watched this movie, and I want to say that my first experience with just Jurassic Park in general was actually one of the sequels, like when I was little. But I remember this movie being ingrained in my brain from my high school literature and film class. I took film class in high school, and I had seen the movie a couple of times previous, but then I got to watch this movie in a new light because we had to read the book and then we had to watch the movie, and we dissected the shit out of this movie, like all the angles, all of like the coloring, the costumes. And so now that I've gotten older and then I studied video and film in college and then revisiting this movie, and I'm still seeing new things that I didn't before, just kind of shows like the giant, I don't know, just how extraordinary this movie is and how much thought and detail was put into it. And so, yeah, I think it's a masterpiece of a film. Watching it again, and every time I watch it, I find something new or I revisit something. I'm like, oh, it still hits. It's still so
still
good.
Hits.
Yeah. And then I love continuity errors in movies. I think it's so fun. And I always get so excited with the part where the hand comes out and touches the velociraptor in the kitchen. You know what I'm talking about?
The hand touches a velociraptor. What
you haven't seen that?
Oh, where
there's a stunt hand that.
For a second, I thought you were talking about like Samuel Jackson's arm. That seemed like
he wasn't
in the kitchen.
But it's so funny that that's in there, and yeah, I don't know. It's such a good, and there's such a good community base behind this movie too, like the fan base for it and the costuming. It's just so good. It's one of my favorite movies.
That's a photo of it, Chris, if you want to know what she's talking about. Like when the raptor scene, the first one breaks, like open the door, there's a hand that kind of comes out and I guess is keeping the animatronic steady in the doorway.
Yeah, because I think it, I don't know if the story was like very top heavy, but he like you could physically see a hand come out from the side and just like touch the butt of the velociraptor.
Yeah. I've never noticed that.
Really?
Yeah, I just watched it obviously for this recently the other day. Isn't it true that the book is like much more violent,
much more
scary?
Yeah.
Well, you read the book as well, Steve?
I have read both books, yes.
Ooh.
I've only read the book once, but I believe the first book kind of encapsulates all three. Is that correct?
No, the first book is the first movie.
Okay.
Yeah, the first book's the first movie. There is like very stark, I mean, it follows the same basic plot line.
Yeah.
But there's very different characterizations in, like, so John Hammond in the book is an absolute evil bastard and not the loving grandfatherly figure that Richard Attenborough plays.
I got some things to say about that, but go on.
Different characters die. Different characters live. The lawyer is fucking awesome in the book. He's one of the best characters. And he's, like, a good dude. He, like, saves the kids a couple times.
Interesting.
And they were like, we can't depict lawyers this way in film.
No, we have to make him an absolute weenie. Give him shorts with his dress shirt.
I know. I should have dressed like him.
One of the things
that would have been all sex appeal.
Yeah. Right.
One of the things that we talked about specifically for the lawyer, like we went into deep characterization in when I took this class in high school. And I truly think my professor that I had was just also a huge fan of this movie. Because I want to say, like, we had, I think maybe 10 weeks with this class or whatever. We spent probably 4 or 5 of it just talking about Jurassic Park. And the fact that I still revisit this movie and I'm not tired of it, is, I think, shows. But I remember for the attorney, like the opening scene where the water is like all blurry out and stuff like that is to like show he's like kind of skeevy and, you know, how he's not able to walk in the... He's like tripping and stuff.
He's all over the place. He's corporations influencing the true spirit of science, basically. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he doesn't belong there.
Oh, yeah.
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 I love that. Those
so good.
Steve, what are your overall thoughts?
Well,
you like this movie?
It's about a B. No. No. So my experience with Jurassic Park is a very special one. This was the very first PG-13 movie I ever saw.
Ooh.
It was the first PG-13 movie I saw in a theater. Came out in 1993.
You would have been 6.
I was 6 years old. I was just a wee tyke. But there were dinosaurs, right? And so, of course, like I was like, mommy, dinosaurs. Because I was just like every other little boy in the world. I was obsessed with dinosaurs. There's a dinosaur movie coming out. It's the dude who made E.T. My mom's like, oh, that's the guy who made E.T. Steve loves E.T. Let's go see the Jurassic Park movie that he made. And, you know, obviously I go see it. It's mind blowing. I still get weepy watching this movie. Like, oh, I'm getting a little weepy now. But like when like the Brachiosaurus first shows up and they're all emotional, like I feel that. And just seeing the dinosaurs move, like the raptor kitchen scene is still, I think, one of the most tense scenes in film. The T-Rex attack is just an incredible technical achievement. And any person who's into film has to be obsessed with how they like film that. The score is great. The acting's great. The audio design's great. I think this might have been one of the first times as a human being I realized, like, oh, audio matters, like sound effects,
sound design,
and stuff like that. Yeah. Because I think I might have seen Jurassic Park before I saw Star Wars for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars is another one of those movies that made me realize that sound design is a big deal.
Is ILM?
ILM did the effects on this, yes.
Isn't that your boy's company,
too? That's George Lucas's company. Actually, I've got some stories about that when we get further on. But so this movie was obviously important to me. I remember being 6 years old in the theater. The scary parts would happen, and I would close my eyes. You're like, oh, no, he's going to eat the lawyer. Ah, and I'd close my eyes. I'd had my eyes closed for most of the raptor scene, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as that Dilophosaurus, like its frills come out, it's like, hands on eyes, right? Immediately. And I remember
that's what Nedry should have done.
When we got it on VHS, there was that classic, like, I don't know if you remember the VHS for this movie, but it's like pitch black and just the Jurassic Park logo. It's like very bold.
It's one
like,
of the dopest fucking logos of all time.
Oh, it's one of the best. Like the production design of this movie as well is incredible. So that's the DVD sign. So imagine that logo just set to a black VHS. But I remember getting that VHS and watching it. And over the course of the summer that we had that, I was like, I don't know, seven or probably at this point. And I'm like challenging myself, like, okay, I'm going to watch the T-Rex scene and not close my eyes. And I would, and I would do it.
Was this
would,
last week?
Yeah.
This is actually on my 36th birthday. But I remember like doing it and running into the kitchen where my mom's doing something like, Mom, I watched the T-Rex scene with my, without my eyes closed. And she's like, all right, buddy. Hey, hey. Good for you.
Kids never.
Yeah. The things that kid won't see.
Never gonna have friends. She starts crying in the kitchen.
But as I grow older, as I grow older and older and older, this is the movie I literally watch Jurassic Park every year without fail. It's usually around August, September. We managed to watch it on my birthday that Madison was at, the party that Erica organized. And actually, the people watching on YouTube will see that we have the set actually decorated Jurassic Park. And a lot of these decorations were from my birthday party. So behind me is the Jurassic Park, what do you call that, gate, the door.
Yes, the
we got some
doors.
Some cool shrubbery behind Kit there. And behind Madison is literally the T-Rex looming over behind her. She looks like Madison. If you were to pose a certain way, it would look like that shot when Malcolm's running away from the T-Rex.
Yeah.
We just need to give you a flare.
Yeah, flare.
We need more depth.
Throw the flare.
Get the kids.
Get the kids.
I'm just in the bush.
You're the clever girl.
I need a shotgun and one of those crooked brimmed hats.
But, and cargo shorts.
Yes.
Oh, which, my God.
Classic. So many pockets.
Oh, I got to remind. We put a pin in that. Let's put a pin in that.
Pen in the but shorts.
Kit, what is your relationship to Jurassic Park 1993?
What can I say that hasn't already been said? I was 5 years old when this movie came out. I did not see it in a theater. I had never been to a movie theater at this point still. But we got the VHS. And I, you know, we wore that out. I had two older brothers that also loved the movie. I mean, it appealed. It's cross-generational. It's just a master work of cinema. We watched. It was like it was Jurassic Park, Men in Black, Lion King, Aladdin, Dick Tracy, Rocketeer.
Dick Tracy. On repeat. Hell yeah.
On repeat. Throwing some Howard the Duck what every now and then.
Howard the Duck.
Damn.
And
she fucks that duck.
That's how we grew up, baby. And then a bunch of Jean-Claude Van Damme. I love this movie. Everything about it's perfect. It's a perfect movie. And crazy that the same year Spielberg did Schindler's List.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, famously.
I didn't know that.
So they filmed Jurassic Park, and then he finishes Jurassic Park and immediately starts filming Schindler's List. So at the time, it was like the first it was the first time they really utilized satellite TV and did Zoom conferences, because the post-production team working on the special effects would have to show him stuff.
Yeah.
So he would film Schindler's List all day, go to his hotel, and they would have this very expensive custom satellite direct link to the studio across the world. And he could like look at what they were creating in the post world and approve stuff. And he finishes filming Schindler's List, I think May 30th. And then this movie came out June 11th, 1993. So literally like.
Yeah, he won Best Picture the same, like in 1994, the 94 Oscars. He wins Best Picture, and not for Jurassic Park, which he also made that year. Like, it's fucking wild. And I think I'm rusty on the lore, but as I recall, he agreed to do Jurassic Park so that they would fund Schindler's List. Like, Schindler's List was his passion project.
He's like,
I'll fucking make your dinosaur movie, and it's going to make you...
I thought he was, like, jazzed for that, because there's a story... and again, I think there is some revisionist history with Steven Spielberg sometimes when he does interviews, but there's an interview I saw where he was, like, at a party, and he ran into Michael Crichton, and he was a fan of Michael Crichton's work, and he's like, hey...
I love when that happens at a party.
When you run into Michael Crichton?
When I run into a famous author as a famous director.
And he asked him, like, hey, you cooking up any ideas in the old noggin there? And Crichton's like, well, I got a dinosaur idea, and Steven Spielberg's like, oh, my God, yes, I want to do that when it's done. And Crichton was like, Spielberg's my first choice and only choice to direct this movie.
When did the book come out?
I think the book came out very shortly before the movie did, because I know they wrote the sequel book specifically because the movie did well.
1990.
Oh, yeah. When
the book came out.
Okay, so like 3 years.
All right.
And so like 2 years before production would have started on this movie.
Wow.
So they gave Spielberg the chance to make Schindler's List on one condition. He had to film Jurassic Park first before he could do any production tasks on Schindler's List. So he was like, bing, bang, boom.
And well, that makes sense, too, because people were a lot of things I was reading when I was doing research on this was that Spielberg was very nimble with this movie. Like, even though this movie, he like is creating brand new technology and is like just literally changing the landscape of how movies are made. He was trying to like, you know, get done as quickly as he could,
which is crazy to me.
Yeah. Not because he didn't like doing it. Yeah, like, if you watch behind the scenes stuff, it looks like Steven Spielberg's having the most fun out of everybody on set.
Well, as a, you know, your director and you're filming what is to be anticipated to be two major blockbuster films. Like, I can imagine, like, he was, I don't know, stressed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, the production designers, there was an interview I saw with them where they were saying, you know, they're building the visitor center of Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And as they're not done with it yet, and Spielberg comes on set and is like, okay, we're good. Leave it as is. And they're like, what? They're scaffolding. We're not done finishing. He's like, oh, we're still building the park. Yeah, leave it. And so that like saved him a ton of money because they're just sick. Like, they're just like, yeah, this is good. They're still building the park. We don't have to finish this.
Yeah.
And so it's it's literally an unfinished set that was supposed to be finished.
Well, and I wonder how, I'm assuming you're talking about the scaffolding, like in the, where the dinosaur bones are and stuff.
And the exterior of it too, like on, I think on the right, like the sides of the building aren't finished. So as they're driving up in the wide shot, you can still see scaffolding being built.
Well, they like came down the scaffolding. So was that kind of integrated into the script as well when they like went up into the ventilation system and stuff and came out?
Yeah.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. What a G.
And they got to ride the bones down to the ground.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to ride the bones?
I love riding bones, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't get it. But yeah, that's my thoughts. I mean, what a picture.
What a moving picture.
What a talkie.
I did not know Schindler's List was kind of the cousin creation of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Even though there's no crossover. Well, maybe. The Nazis are dinosaurs. Are evil dinosaurs.
They should also be extinct.
Yes. No, he actually tried to push off the direction of Schindler's List on Sidney Pollack and Martin Scorsese because he was so nervous about doing it, but also he was so busy at the same time. And he pulled off one of the greatest cinematic feats in history, making these two movies in the same year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
One of my favorite movies, period. I'm not even being like an asshole, is the Spielberg documentary, which I have recommended on the show like 5 times. I think it's still streaming on Max. I've watched it like 3 times.
I have not seen it, but I'll
want to
check it out.
It's so good because what I've said this every time, but what's so funny to me is that Lucas, De Palma, Scorsese, and Spielberg were all buddies. Mm-hmm. And they were all up-and-coming directors that nobody knew.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're like the
biggest,
like the four horsemen of a massive
Knights of the
movement.
Round Table.
Yeah. And they were just homies. And so like Brian De Palma is the one who came up with the Star Wars opening crawl going into space. He watched it, the first cut, and was like, dude, none of this makes any fucking sense. You need to have some, you know, a prequel in the beginning telling people, like, setting the stage, my guy. And you can even do it like stars on space or whatever. And so that, I just find that interesting that they were like, and you want to check out my Indiana Jones movie, you know? And and they're like, I don't get it. Give him a whip.
Was that your George Lucas?
I did my best. It's not a Steve's George Lucas.
Steven, I have an idea for a guy with a whip and he fights some Nazis. All right, George, we'll do it.
Well,
what if Shia LaBeouf swings with the monkeys?
Wasn't
give me the monkeys.
Indiana
scene,
Jones was a favor to Spielberg, as I recall, because the movie that Spielberg had done previously. So Spielberg had a reputation for going 2 months over schedule and $15 million over budget. And he was getting away with it because his movies usually were massively successful, but studios didn't like him. They didn't love him because it's like, you're going to go $20 million over budget and you're going to take fucking forever.
Yeah.
And Lucas was like, I want you to do Indiana Jones, but it was like, you can't fuck this up, man. You know? And it was like, because they were buddies and like, you can do that with your, like, imagine having buddies like that.
I know.
Don't fuck it up.
Direct my Indiana Jones, Knox, you know?
Right.
Knox.
Give him a whip.
Honestly, I'm a shitty director. I'm not gonna. I know.
I know it. Everyone else knows it. I don't people good, but I like coming up with worlds.
That's true.
I don't people good. Oh my god.
That's why you shouldn't write the dialogue either, George.
Yeah.
How about I just stand in the back and nod my head yes or no at ideas? So Steven Spielberg is so incredible because you watch behind the scenes footage of this movie. And like I said, he looks like he's having an absolute ball. And I was watching a documentary. It was just like a 20-minute like Steven Spielberg directing Jurassic Park documentary. And I was actually getting emotional, like listening to him talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Like he was like, it was very important to me. I guess probably because he knew that directing Schindler's List was just over the horizon and he knew that was going to be very difficult for him.
Sure.
He was like, it was very difficult to me that when I directed Jurassic Park, I would do it as if I were a little kid. Mm. And you watch him and yeah, he's like, the actors are on set reacting to, you know, things that aren't there yet. Yeah. And so you see him on a bullhorn going, wah, wah. Now look to the right. Like he's making weird little dinosaur noises and it's really funny to watch. And
yeah.
He's bopping around and making 65 million year jokes. And the two child actors, what are the names? There's Joseph Mazzola who plays Tim and I think Ariana Richards who plays Lex.
Yes.
Both of them say, and this is something we talked about in our ET review, is that he's so good at directing children.
Oh, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like play games with them on set and he would... Joseph Mazzola specifically was talking about how Steven Spielberg would ask him for advice, like little 10-year-old Timmy, you know, like, hey, what do you have? Would you have an idea for this scene? And he would give him his idea and he was like, let's do that. And he said it really made him feel like it's because he was saying like on most movies as a child actor, you feel as like this othered person, like mm-hmm. there's the adults doing their thing and then you're the little kid that they bring in from time
needs to
time
to with like directions. A wrangler.
Yeah, but he was saying you need a wrangler.
It's like filming with animals.
Get the cats in here. But he said Steven Spielberg really made him feel like they were a part of the gang, as yeah. it were, which is so sweet.
I mean, this is like the perfect storm, this movie, right? Like even the child actors are incredible. You've got Laura Dern.
Yeah.
Sam Neill.
Yes.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
Richard Attenborough.
Yes.
Yes.
Sam Jackson.
B.D. Wong.
I always forget he's in this movie.
Samuel Jackson.
And I am
hold on to
always
your butt.
So happy when I see him.
Just constantly lighting a cigarette. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. Hanging as soon as he puts butts. One out, just lighting another one. That's what he meant by hold on to your butts. Cigarette
hold on
butts.
To your butts.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
Hang on to your ciggies.
John Williams doing... one, if not the most iconic score, one of his 20 iconic scores.
20 being conservative.
Let me just poop out another great soundtrack.
Yeah. And like you said, perfect sound design. I think they did, what was it, like six, it was like whales and all kinds of shit garbled together to make the dinosaur like
let's
sounds.
Hear it, Steve,
you want to hear it?
Yeah.
No, this is a little long. It's about a minute long, but we can talk over it.
Okay.
This is
T-Rex is not a Gary vocal, Winstrom. It's really his feet. So this is sections of a redwood tree falling for the footsteps.
So that's a T-Rex stomping.
Trees falling?
Yeah.
And then whale. I didn't get much vocals from a whale that I liked, but their blowhole made good breathing for the T-Rex. This is alligator, low frequency, really low.
Nuts.
Sounds like my stomach.
So hear how it'll be the low frequency element of the final roar. This is the line which I used for the attack. I tried not to use this, but I had to. It's too good.
It is very good.
Yeah.
The key element is the high frequency scream element, which is a baby elephant that we recorded. The big elephants we recorded weren't very interesting at that time, but the baby elephant came out and made this scream, and the baby elephant only did this once, and we kept trying to get it to do it again. And the handlers were saying, we never heard it do that before. That's a weird sound. So every time the T-Rex screams in the first Jurassic Park, that baby elephant is part of the major roar. Here it is by itself, the little cute baby elephant and the high-pitched scream that it made. That was a baby elephant. So now see how that blends
that's
the with
noise.
The rest.
That's yeah. wild.
So this is all of it together. Like, how wild is that? That you're taking, like, all these different things and combining them into one, and you create a whole new creature.
That's some voodoo shit.
That gave me chills.
Yeah. I mean, that
T-Rex. That baby elephant noise is the T-Rex, like, the, like, oh, God. You know, it just scrapes your spine.
I think sound design is by far my favorite part of film. Like, that. Oh, yeah. God.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's wild. And then to be like, oh, I'm going to record these animals and, you know, just get whatever I can. And then kind of just because you're creating something from nothing. Like, we don't know what dinosaur noises sounded like.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
And these sounds that they've made have become so, like, I feel like we as a civilization of human beings, like, directly correlate a T-Rex to that noise now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you watch anything in
every
cinema,
time I see one, I'm like...
Yeah.
If you see a T-Rex in any movie and it doesn't, and that noise does not come out of its mouth, you're like, that's not a believable T-Rex. Mm-mm. I don't think that T-Rex.
You didn't do your research.
Yeah, you didn't do your research. That's not how they sound, obvi. Or like the raptor, all the raptor caws and screeches and squeals. Like, oh man, it's so perfect.
It's, you don't want it to be too accurate though. Like when dinosaurs have feathers, it's like, stop.
Roar!
Scary dino.
That's how raptors really sound.
Yeah.
Raptor.
Like they're Pokemon.
Run.
Raptor.
Yeah, and I think so you've got all of that from a technical standpoint. I mean, this is one of the first and most influential use of computer-generated effects, right? Like the CGI.
This was the one.
They were going to do everything practical, and it just wasn't looking right. You know, it was probably going to come out like a B movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad story because they always, from day one, they planned on anything close up was always going to be the animatronics that like Stan Winston's team was going to create because it's Stan Winston, right?
Yeah.
Legend of the industry. But the wide shots were originally supposed to be stop motion capture created by Phil Tippett, who is
a legend.
He is a legend. He is the stop motion guy. Like if you watch anything in the 80s that featured any sort of stop motion, like Ed 209 for RoboCop, that's Phil Tippett. And then there was these two guys. I have the one guy's name in front of me, but there were two computer-generated guys at ILM. What they were going to do was, so Phil Tippett would do the stop motion of the dinosaurs, but because stop motion will always look fake because it's still frames, right?
Yeah.
And motion, there's motion blur. So if you're watching the YouTube, as I'm moving my hand, you can see blur as my hand moves. That's just how it looks. But if it's stop motion, you're taking individual stills and you don't get that blur. So even if you're not aware of that happening, the human mind still recognizes, well, that doesn't look real. Yeah. And it's because there's a lack of motion blur. So what these designers were supposed to do was get the animatronic or the stop motion footage from Phil Tippett, and then they were going to add motion blur in post to make it more real. But it still wasn't coming out perfect. So these two guys, one guy's name is Steve Spaz Williams, and I forget the other guy's name. I wish I had it in front of me. But they were like, I think we can do this better. Like Steve specifically was the one who was like, I'm going to make a computer-generated model. And his boss, who was Dennis Murren, who's kind of in charge of the special effects team, was like, no, you're not fucking doing that. We hired Phil Tippett for that. Stay in your lane, dude.
Yeah.
And so for 5 months, this guy like went rogue on his own and created a skeletal structure of the T-Rex and animated it walking.
Oh.
And then there was supposed to be a meeting with like Steven Spielberg, Kathleen Kennedy, Dennis Murren. We're going to come in to kind of see how the stop motion digital motion blur was going.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, Steve Williams, just took the animation he had been working on in secret for months and just put it on a monitor and had it looping.
Yeah.
So when they came into his office for their meeting, Kathleen Kennedy was like, hey, what's this? And they explained it. And they're like, oh, that's awesome.
That's baller.
Start working on that. And then Dennis Murren's like, you motherfucker.
He said, mic drop.
Yeah. And then that changed the whole, like, I think for a couple months, they're like, okay, put skin on it, animate it running, and we'll see how it is. He spent months on it. Steve Williams was super worried about it because he was afraid he had been like running his mouth and he wasn't going to be able to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
But he managed to make this like 5 second clip of the T-Rex running, fully modeled with skin and everything. They put it on a roll of film. They took it over to the private studio, I think in Lucas's private studio, because it was like Kathleen Kennedy, George Lucas, Stan Winston, Steven Spielberg, and they watched it. And the story is that George Lucas cried because it was so incredible.
George.
And Stan Winston's like running like, well, I have to make some calls. And, and then from that point on, they're like, okay, Phil Tippett's team's no longer doing the effect. And it was like apparently a real big thing. Like Phil Tippett got like pneumonia and depression and was just no one could get a hold of him for like 10 days.
Talk about sore loser.
Well, the other
that's when he started working on Mad God. I'm pretty sure that took him like 20 years.
Probably, yeah. Well, the urban legend is Steven Spielberg had the meeting with Phil Tippett to let him know they were no longer doing the stop motion effects, and Phil Tippett said, "I feel like I'm going extinct." And Steven Spielberg went, "Ooh, that's a good line. We're putting that in the movie."
Oh my gosh.
But everything kind of worked out for Phil Tippett. He's still credited as the dinosaur supervisor.
The Dino Force.
He's the dinosaur supervisor because the CGI animators didn't know how to animate necessarily.
Like the motions that they would animate, right?
Yeah, okay. But Phil Tippett had spent a whole career knowing how people move and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he was in charge of kind of making sure. I think they had some sort of rig where he would still do the stop motion animation, but that rig could correlate into a computer, and then the computer could know that movement. And Yeah, so he still was able to do it.
Was it his hand that we saw on the dinosaur in the kitchen?
That was Carl, one of the grips.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you watch
Carl, your fucking hands in the shot.
Fuck it, Carl.
Fuck
yeah, if
Carl.
You watch the episode of Jurassic Park on the movies that made us, they go into that story real hard. So if you want to know more about that, check that out.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff, especially for students of film. Like you said, so much going on there.
Because every movie does this now. Like every movie is computer animated stuff.
This is where George dreamt of the prequels. And that's why he was crying.
I'm going to make so much more money.
Oh, my God.
I can make the prequels now.
I just got an idea for the cantina scene to be extended.
I want a long mouth alien to sing, and everyone's going to hate it.
He looks like the pile of shit and says, I have an idea.
I know people good.
Everyone knows this.
This episode was brought to you by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, you know what's good for you, but your brain gets in the way and you just can't quite pull it off. Like when you're trying to fall asleep at night, you know, you got to get up at 7 a.m. You got to work. You want to go to the gym before work. But at 3 a.m., you're just thinking about hippopotamuses. Hippopotami. I don't know how to pluralize it. It doesn't matter. You get the idea. So sometimes your brain's getting in its own way. You know what you should do, what's good for you, but you just can't do it. Therapy helps you figure out what's holding you back so you can work for yourself instead of against yourself. You can help find the blocks in your life that are getting in your way. And BetterHelp can get you there. It can match you up with a licensed therapist to help meet your needs. If you don't like your therapist, you can switch free of charge at any time. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/streamingthings.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's October, and along with the scares, we're bringing our own appreciation for the patrons of Streaming Things, the super patrons especially. We want to give them a special shout out for the month of October. Thank you so much to Becky the Farmer, Kaylee Sampson, Stanton Valentino, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Optimus, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Little Tickler, Svento 7, Jay Scramo, A.K. Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Butthorn, Conrad, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Emmy, Joe Velez, Valerie, John Collins, Amber McVeigh, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun, Loving, Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Lauren Waller, Jadinklage Morgoon, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Ashley Powers, Stephen the Fifth, Casey McCain, and Enza. Thank you all so much, and back to the show.
I think watching it this most recent time, I was really struck by how what's so special about this movie, what anchors this movie, the dinosaurs are cool. Like, it's legitimately scary at many points. Like you pointed out, like, this would be a great, he should do more horror. He's just not a mean-spirited person. So I don't think that occurs to him, but like, he's a really effective horror director. But it's the emotional core of Sam Neill, right? Grant, and his hatred of children.
Oh yeah.
And his reluctance to be a father, and how that kind of, you know, Laura Dern's like really patient about it, but she's someone who wants kids, so this is kind of an issue that they're gonna have as soon as they're not obsessed with their work, right?
Right.
And so that whole arc of him learning that he's actually a really good father, you know. Specifically, there's a moment like right in the middle when Lex is freaking out. And he left us talking about the lawyer way after the fact. You know, she's just like, the shock is subsiding. And he said, that's not what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not even scared, ostensibly. Like, he's not freaking out. I mean, his hand is steady. You know what I mean? Like, he's ready to rock. I don't know. I think it's a really special moment as an adult watching it, like how much he protects those kids.
Because you're right. Like, even though this movie has this really, really great concept of like, hey, what if dinosaur exists? What if there's a theme park about them and everything breaks down?
Because that's all Crichton.
Yeah, that's all Crichton.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Crichton also came up with Dr. Grant taking care of the kids. But I think the whole like Dr. Grant hates kids thing is very much a movie thing. Like, I think it's present in the book, but it's very hammered home in the movie. There's more emotionality in the movie than there is in the book. The book is very much about science and what has man done and all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I think there's something really Spielbergian about daddy issues and like parents. And he puts that in all of his movies because he has, you know, the divorce really fucked him up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. it really did. Yeah.
And watch The Fabelmans if you want his arc to be completed. It's literally just a movie about his mom. But yeah, I think it's just really special, and it hits every time. However, you did mention John Hammond and how
John Hamm,
not John Hamm. He's always on my mind. That man. I was also struck by what a piece of shit he is this time, more than
in this movie.
The 300 other times I've watched this movie, yes,
yeah.
And I get what you're saying. Like, he clearly, there is a read on the character where like, this is his life's work. He's just so obsessed and so passionate. He believes in it so much. He's unwilling to relinquish this dream. And that's why he's over-reliant on his own ability to do this. His ego is what gets his family in trouble, what gets everybody in trouble. Poor guy. Like, and at the end, when he's staring at the park to say goodbye and they have to kind of snap him out of it, that's sad, right?
Yeah.
There's also a very legitimate take where you notice that the guy pushes everything through inspections. Like, there's a comment early on where they say Hammond hates inspections.
Yeah.
You are creating one of the most dangerous things unknown to man, not ever known. Like, this is completely uncharted territory. And you're rushing through the science. You're going to open this park to the public, specifically children. That is your target demographic, you say later on. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to rush the inspections, right? Like, everything about this.
As Laura Dern points out, there are poisonous plants in the lobby, but he just picked them because they look good.
They're so pretty.
Yeah, they're so pretty. And Dennis Nedry specifically betrays the park because Hammond won't pay him enough. And Dennis Nedry is literally the only person in charge of like
security,
the entire infrastructure of the park. And he just will not work with, and then obviously Dennis Nedry's a little bit of an asshole, but
don't get cheap on me, Dotson.
Don't get cheap on me.
That was Hammond's mistake.
Yep.
But so also, I think he's like a gambler and stuff, and so that's why, like, he could make a ton of money. He just doesn't have enough because he's bad with it.
Yeah.
Because Hammond's like, I don't judge people for their mistakes.
I'll not be drawn in another financial debate with you, Dennis. I really will not.
Exactly.
I also love how John Hammond is presented in this all white, like almost godly figure. Like he is playing God, essentially, like creating this. Like, all tying back to my high school class. When I say we analyzed the shit out of this movie, we really did. But he's like wearing all white, like to embody this like God, like I created this, you know, I created these dinosaurs. I am playing God element. And then the juxtaposition of that is Ian Malcolm's character, who's wearing all black and like being the sound of reason. Like you are, you know, taking this way too far. And again, just I think it's tying in more into like the wardrobe element, how like the detail oriented they went with that. But
they're diametrically opposed viewpoints.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then you have the attorney that's wearing like this ugly ass beige color, kind of like the mix in between of, you know, wanting to take in the money part of it, but also kind of having reservations as well. So
I love the John Hammond character because you're right. He's very complex. Like none of this happens without him. Like he, like all the stuff happens and goes wrong because of the mistakes that John Hammond's made.
Yeah.
But there's also this like really beautiful and tragic story to that character, because you could tell like he's just somebody who really wants to make something that wows people, that opens up imagination, that and dinosaurs is that for him.
Yeah, the monologue about the flea circus is where a lot of the empathy comes in.
There's this earnestness to him, and he's not like most billionaires in movies where it's like all about the money, because there's that point when the lawyer's like, we can charge whatever we want. And John Hammond's like, no, everyone deserves to see this. Like, this is something that's going to benefit all of mankind.
Yeah, but then the lawyer says, we can have a coupon day. And then Hammond's like, that is a good idea.
That's funny.
You know?
It's funny.
And he brings his grandchildren there specifically to manipulate the paleontologists, you know what I mean? Like that is their purpose there, to like have everybody intoxicated by how much fun they're having. And that is this, again, this is people have already died at this park. That is why everyone's there to kind of testify that it's okay to open. That's why he wants them there.
The investors are concerned.
And I know, again, he's blinded by his own ego, his own belief. And so he doesn't feel like his grandchildren are in any danger. Maybe you could make that argument. But like, as a parent, as an adult watching this, I'm like, you're a piece of shit. Get them away from me. And where are their parents? Well, you just let like you're going to grandpa's weird island with dinosaurs.
Well, did you catch at the beginning when I forget who says this line, but supposedly John Hammond's daughter is going through a divorce, which is why I think the children are there. Because I had the same thought. I was like, if my multi-million dollar father was making, you know, dinosaurs on an island, my kids would not be there. But, you know, and if I was going through a divorce, maybe.
Yeah.
get him out of my sights.
Yeah. Because I got some pirates coming over this weekend.
Yeah. I can't have them here. Mm-mm.
Do you know the original ending for Jurassic Park, the movie? What it was supposed to be?
So I thought of a joke after the fact.
Oh, sorry.
No,
do you want to say
no,
it?
No.
The floor is yours.
They're going to swab my poop deck. I should have...
That is one big pile of shit.
Oh shit.
But go on.
No, the original ending for Jurassic Park, so it ends mostly the same. The raptors chase them, they go into the lobby, right?
Yeah.
So the original ending was one of the raptors shows up, Grant, they all get on like a crane or something that's in the lobby. Grant, like the raptor's on the crane, he smashes it into the T-Rex skull, which falls and it kills the raptor. And then the second one comes out, and it looks like the raptor's about to pounce on him. But instead of a T-Rex coming and saving the day, John Hammond shows up and shoots it. And it's supposed to be this like character arc closing moment for John Hammond, literally, because he's killing his dream.
The baby hatches.
Yeah, it's the first baby. He's like, I want to be present for the birth of every animal on this island. And he literally kills one at the end. And it's kind of like him not endorsing his own park. And his character arc goes through that loop. Mm-hmm. But I think you get that.
Yeah.
With that, like you said, there's that shot of him like looking wistfully back at the park and looking sad. And like, I think you get that he feels that way. You don't need that sort of like Rambo moment with John Hammond.
Well, I also think too, I don't know when it became a realization for him, but I'm sure it was when him and Ian Malcolm were in the little bunker. And you have, again, like the smashing of opinions between the two of them. And they're kind of arguing how to direct Ellie, like through the, I don't know. I think that's when the realization kind of sunk in as well.
Yeah. And then I think he starts to think about it in the conversation he has with Ellie over the ice cream. Mm-hmm. I think she's the first one that really kind of punctured through his bubble of ego.
She hits him in the face with it. Yeah. She's like, "You're still thinking about it." He's like, "Oh, it's going to be great. Don't worry. We're going to fix all this." And this is just another flea circus.
She's like, "Other people are still dying, dude."
Yeah,
like,
that is his complete turn. But I love that at first, everyone's missing, including his grandchildren, and he's just in there eating ice cream. And I get it. It becomes a somber, great scene, but initially it's a shock. Like, bro. And then she says, "The ice cream is good.
Who doesn't stress eat?
Spare no expense.
That ice cream is going to go bad, Chris. There's no power."
Exactly.
But watching the ending this time, I think they were inspired heavily by King Kong. Because like the whole idea is that the T-Rex is kind of a good guy in a sense. In the same way that King Kong is like, you know, an animal. Like, it's going to do what it's going to do. Not a safe friend, but kind of the king of the jungle in a sense where it's not... It's kind of a hero at times, and that's how people view it. And the raptors are the real enemy because they're the smarmy, smart little fuckers.
They're bastards, man.
They're like playing poker in the jungle and shit, like, meh.
Are you talking about like the ending where the banner falls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my T-Rex noise.
That's literally what happened. Like Steven Spielberg, he was like, "We can't go through this whole movie and not show the T-Rex again. He's the hero. Like, people are going to want to see that T-Rex." So they rewrote the ending so the T-Rex saves the day. And
it's a T-Rex cue.
He specifically called out King Kong.
Really?
As that. And
that's
also
awesome.
The gate behind me, he told like the, I think Art Bell is his name, the production designer who designed all the stuff for the park. He told like, he had this like Disneyland entrance originally. Like, it looked like a Disneyland theme park entrance. And Steven Spielberg's like, "No, I want it to look like the door in King Kong, the gate that separates King Kong from the people of Skull Island." And so that's where the inspiration is. Actually, there's so much King Kong in this movie.
Fuck yeah. I'm smart. Yeah.
You are smart. You're a smart boy.
I may not be a smart man, but I know what King Kong is.
You movie good.
I don't people good, but I movie good. I want to see Forrest Gump's TikTok channel analyzing movies. Two stars. Didn't have Jenna.
You should make a joke letterbox account.
I love House of Cards because it's got Jenna. Robin Wright's in it.
Thank you
for that.
I think you need to actually make a Forrest Gump letterbox account and just make joke reviews like
awesome.
That.
Awesome.
Okay.
Please do that.
I would follow that on LBXD.
LBXD, baby.
Life's like a box of chocolates. Never know what you're gonna get.
That was the closest Pippin impersonation you've ever done, and it was your Forrest Gump
show. I know. Look, I'm a rookie. I gotta keep working on it.
I didn't even register that.
This is my safe space to do practice in my impression.
Doing British Forrest Gump.
Jenny.
Are there any standouts in this movie, like in terms of like actors or?
I mean, it's all
It's got to be Goldblum as far as, because that guy's personality. I have a question for Madison.
Lay it on me.
Based on your.
My attire.
Your attire and your general taste. I'm assuming I know the answer to this question, but it's curious to me. Do you find Ian Malcolm to be someone you'd want to sleep with? Or is he smarmy? Yes. He doesn't creep you out?
Yes.
You don't think he's inappropriate? In his,
I don't think so.
Overtures. Yeah, he's got multiple ex-wives.
Are you talking about Jeff Goldblum specifically or Dr. Ian Malcolm?
Dr. Ian Malcolm, because I don't think it's okay to act the way he's acting, and yet women, people in general, I would like to have sex with him.
I would like to have sex with him.
Exactly. So I'm like, what is it about?
Off and his legs
hurt? You're asking 25-year-old Madison. The answer is yes, I would definitely sleep with him.
Okay, say you're in that helicopter.
If he did the water drop butterfly theory thing.
It would work on me.
He'd be like, really?
Tiny little disruptions.
Okay, hold on. If you're separating it, it's just Ian Malcolm, not Jeff Goldblum.
It's the character.
I would be hesitant because I know I would be like, you're flirting with me.
He's
like,
the bad boy of mathematicians.
Yeah, like you're trying to fucking work. You're there with your boyfriend.
He doesn't know you're together though.
He does not care.
He doesn't care. You're right. He doesn't give a shit, but he doesn't know. But when Dr. Grant's like, yeah, we're together in the car, he's like, oh, man.
Dang.
I'm sorry.
That's his way of saying, oh, dang. You're going to be really mad when I fuck her. You know, that's what that is. I was just curious because it's like you're in that helicopter. You're there to work. You're there with your boyfriend. And there's this guy in the corner. Rawr. Rawr. Exactly. He's got his fucking shirt mostly unbuttoned. He's chilling. He's like,
he's posing with a broken leg.
He's not even subtly flirting when he's doing the water hand trick. He's like caressing. He's almost sucking the pinky. And I love that Laura Dern's performance is one who's totally into it, but also like seemingly oblivious. Like they play her like she looks at Grant like, check this out.
Is it chaos theory great?
Yeah. He's breastfeeding at me. I don't know why. Check this out. Chaos is crazy. So anyway, that's my rant. I was just wondering, and I knew you're going to be like, oh, totally. And I just find that, like, I feel like we make excuses for certain characters against how we would normally like people to behave. And we're like, except for that guy.
But
I'm into it.
I do want to bring up, though.
Like, he's so Jersey Shore, but it works.
Guido. He has Guido energy. I do want to bring up, though, Dr. Sanders Ellie and Grant. I'm like, it took me a little bit. I had to watch the movie a couple of times to be like, are they together?
There's no chemistry, like sexually.
It's not that. Right. But I was like,
touches her butt when you first see him.
Oh, yeah, I do. I do. I've seen that now.
He's digging at that dig.
But I always was like, are they together? Or was Dr. Grant just like saying that to Malcolm to like
protect her?
Yeah. And I believe they are together.
They are supposed to be together, but it's supposed to be like not a will they won't they, but they have a weird complicated relationship. Even in the book, where like there's you could tell there's an attraction there, but for whatever reason, like Grant has like relationship commitment issues.
They've never slept together in the book.
Well, no,
I think they have. Yeah,
okay.
Like I think that they are actively in a relationship. Like they've been together. My interpretation of it is they are working. So at the first part of the book or the movie, they're being very professional and they're just not letting their relationship show through, which I think is a solid, thing to have in a relationship. And then obviously towards the end of the movie, when, shit has hit the fan and they've been apart from each other and they come back together. That's when more of the relationship
shows. They've been together for a while, so like some of the heat has died down.
Yeah.
If they were dating 6 months, they'd be banging in one of the Jeeps, you know?
Yeah. That scene with Dennis Nedry getting attacked in a Jeep would be those two. But like coming.
Yeah.
I agree with you. One of the things I hated that the sequels always did was they sort of like they broke those two up, because I was like I want to see them. I want to see them kiss. I want to see it. I love love. And I always was a stand for Dr. Grant and Ellie Sattler getting together.
Yeah.
And then the third movie, like she's married to another dude, has kids with that guy. And you can tell he's like, missed my chance. Darn. Ah. And then by Dominion, they're like, I should have never left you, Dr. Grant. Like, oh, my God. Fuck off.
There's no chemistry there, I'll be honest. And Sam Neill is a sexy man from some weird sexy cinema earlier in his life.
Yeah.
If you look
was
it
that
up.
Movie but you just Possession? Watched? Possession, yeah.
I kind of liked that they didn't kiss in the movie, because, I think Laura Dern's character kind of alludes to this when John Hammond is like, I should really be the one going, blah, blah, blah. And then she's kind of like rolling her eyes. Well, we can talk about sexism when I get back.
Yeah,
and I think if there was a kiss, and I'm sure this was a discussion in the writing room.
You have a cane.
Right.
Let's be practical.
Let's be practical here. I could definitely outrun you.
I'm fast as fuck.
I'm sure there was a discussion in the writing room on whether or not there would be a kiss or a more romantic element, like, yeah, between the two of them.
I don't even need a kiss.
I don't need that either.
Chemistry.
But I thought there was chemistry.
There's definitely a love there between them
He's giving Ted. He's giving
now,
Ted and Karen.
I could argue that the love they feel is the love of, like, a good friend or a mentor, mentee, that type of love.
Yeah.
I could give you that. I definitely feel there's a love between the characters.
He knows a lot about raptors. Do I think he knows where a G-spot is? I do not. He's not giving that knowledge.
I don't know.
Hey, when it comes to Dr. Grant, you're alive when
I think he does, because to be so...
Like, you
got to
do the raptor claw upside down.
To be so secure with telling...
Sorry.
To be super secure with who, like, to be in a relationship with a woman as beautiful as Dr. Sattler, and then to not immediately make it known that he is in a relationship with her.
That's a good take.
Although you are near, you know, Ian Malcolm, who's clearly flirting with her, is clearly.
And he's completely unbothered by that.
Exactly.
He's like, go for it, bro.
I think. He does know where the G-spot is.
Oh, I get it.
Just because of that reason.
I love that take.
Yeah.
And he's just like.
Because if you're a man and you're confident. Insecure. Yeah. And you're a man, you're insecure with yourself. You're immediately being like, that's my girl. Don't fuck with her.
Is it weird to want the threesome right now?
I mean,
in my head?
No.
Honestly, that's all I want.
The Grant Sattler Malcolm hanging out in the Jeep.
Yeah. That's all I want.
Dinosaur is like, I'll chase the kids.
My dick finds a way.
Have you guys heard the Ian Malcolm laugh song?
No.
No, please play it.
Please. It's going to be my new ringtone.
So it's this laugh. Someone remixed it into a song right here. Here it comes.
I need this for my ringtone.
I'm just going to let that play in the background. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I love it.
So good.
But yeah, I think Jeff Goldblum's the standout.
Absolutely.
However, there's two.
So you two big up dinosaurs?
Sorry, I had to go for the drop. I felt it was coming.
I feel like I'm at a club right now. I need Steve to be a DJ. Oh shit. John Williams could never.
Spared no expense on this song.
That's a song created by a YouTuber named Flipshot. So
thank you, Flipshot, awesome. For making Flipshot. My whole life just click and come together. I think there's two all-timer sequences that stand out for me in the realm of cinema.
Cinema.
There's obviously the T-Rex, right?
Yes.
The quivering of the glass of water. Visions based on movement.
Done with a guitar string.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very nice.
They had a guitar string underneath the console of the car, and they would just flip the guitar string, and it would create that little ripple in the water.
I love that.
And when the T-Rex first comes out, and, you know, the whole thing, like killing the lawyer, spinning the car around with the kids are doing incredible acting. It's riveting stuff. And then chasing the car later, even I would throw that in there. Must go faster. Must go faster.
Objects are closer than they appear.
But then also,
yeah,
Grant and Tim climbing down the tree with the car falling after them.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking chef's kiss cinema. I mean, you know, the whole setup of that is so creative. It's terrifying. Climbing down trees is shitty by itself. It's scary anyway, but then you get the car falling after you.
A car chasing you.
And it's also, it's rooted in the characters because Timmy is the annoying kid and Grant hates kids. And that's what he's in the position of doing is having to save that kid specifically. And
I threw up.
They yeah, exactly. You know, and he's very cool about all that stuff. He's like, I won't tell anybody.
I love that. That's such a kid thing to be. I threw up.
I froed up.
Mom, I froed up. Can I sweep with you?
That's all right, buddy. I won't tell anybody.
Well, we're back in the car again. I love that line.
Yeah. Well, at least you're not in the tree.
Yeah. Anyway,
there's a weird continuity. Is like the car is knocked off that chasm into a tree, but the T-Rex like walked into the. Onto the road, so it's always like, how does what's the land structure like behind that fence.
I do remember that being, do you know what we're talking about, Chris?
No.
So at the T-Rex exhibit, you see like the goat and it's a flat area. And so the T-Rex walks over the gated part to get to where the cars are. But when the car is like dipping over the side.
Oh, back in the hole where it came from.
Yeah.
Is a,
it's a hole.
Drop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that particular part.
Or yeah, but it's right
it's
where
the, part
the
where
car
came through.
Yeah, the car kind of goes straight up on that lip and falls over. So like it would be at least like maybe the T-Rex came straight through, and then there's just a sheer 50 foot
T-Rex
drop.
T-Rex is shimmying on the side, like trying
with
to
his
get
tiny
to the
arms
top. Yeah, he's like
holding on.
He's
fence.
Holding on to the.
That's why
the
he was
fence.
Holding on to the rope because he was like he's actually like, kind of like shimmying across.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna get that goat.
Like Laura Croft shifting on the wall.
It was two little arms.
Oh,
I want that goat.
That's the only way to make this movie better is to put Laura Croft in it.
All the dinosaurs would be dead.
True.
She pull out her dual pistols and shoot.
Unstoppable.
What's
no,
the,
her tits
what's the other?
Just like fucking.
This is Austin Powers.
The yeah. pixelated triangular ones. Yeah.
She'd poke the Clever dinosaur's girl. Eyes out.
What was the other sequence that you mentioned?
Those two together, I think. That's the,
oh, all together.
They're back to back. I mean, obviously, when the two kids are stuck with the raptors in the kitchen would be the other one I would throw in.
Yeah.
That's legitimately fucking terrifying. And it gets me every time because Lex is doing incredible work. Mm-hmm. But when she's stuck in the, I've never worked in a fancy kitchen, whatever that is, and she's trying to close the door. And yeah. the raptor gets fooled because it's a reflection. He's like,
just slams head first into stainless steel.
That's great. You know, because like. They're really young kids, and watching that, even as an adult, I'm like, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
For sure, I'm dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. I mean, I just want to give a shout out. I know a lot of people talk about how cool the T-Rex is, and the T-Rex is, like, so cool looking. I mean, the animatronic alone, it's like a...
Everything holds up today, too.
Oh, my gosh,
it's
yeah.
30 years later.
30 years old, and you watch this movie, it looks better than most movies that come out today.
The only thing that's kind of like, oh, that's... early CGI is the Brachiosaurus.
Yeah.
The first time you see him and it zooms in on the skin and it looks a little bit like a PS3 game.
Yeah.
So what version did you guys watch? Because I watched, I think, the like very remastered, redigitized version.
I actually don't know because I believe, I'm sad to say, I streamed this on Peacock.
Oh.
I actually don't own the 4K movie.
I rented it on Amazon, but I do have the DVD version here. Full screen, by
oh,
the
full
way.
Screen. There
full
you go.
Screen.
Gotta get the full screen.
Mm-hmm.
No, does it say full or wide?
Full.
Oh, that sucks.
You fool.
Full.
But a full screen means that it's stretched to fit the TV. Widescreen would be the real version Spielberg would want you to see.
Oh, well, I thought full screen was like they just got rid of the bars and you see more.
No, it means
you
they
see
they
more
like
vertically,
zoom in.
But you
yeah.
you lose the left and right sides of the screen.
Wow, mind blown.
Actually, it's funny you say that because when I was a kid, I only bought full screen specifically. I hated the bars.
Yeah.
And Andy would make fun of me. And now that we're later when he went to film school and I got into the stuff I was into, he was like, remember when you were a fucking dum-dum? And I was like, shut up. I hated the bars.
Well, in your defense, the TVs we had back then, full screen was better because if you're watching Jurassic Park, you want to see a big giant dinosaur.
You're watching it on like a 4x3 TV
on your
32-inch
TV even. Yeah. It's still like a lot.
And then if you lose that little bar, like, yeah, it's totally understandable that you would want the full screen. I mean, you paid for that TV
screen. I'm watching
screen.
Tomb Raider. I want some extra.
Exactly.
I don't even need the wide.
But no, I love the design of the raptors specifically.
Yeah. Because
those things just look mean and nasty, but also calculating. Like
cunning.
Yeah, the way they even animate their like eyelids where you can see them kind of like, oh, like
thinking.
At one point, it's when it sees Lex trying to, you know, close herself in the, it zooms in on its eye and it like does this like squint where it's like, I'm going to fucking tear that kid apart.
I hate you.
Everything about you. I'm going to throw my whole body into your demise. And then when they escape the kitchen,
and they're mean too.
The
way they're like,
watches them.
The way they're taunting them and stuff as they're prowling the kitchen. Like, this is why your parents don't love you. Like, come on, man.
They're getting a divorce because it's your fault.
They're tapping their nail like
the claw
I
tap.
I do like that when they kind of reference the claw because Dr. Grant has the claw and he like throws it, but then you see it later.
Looks like a 6-foot turkey.
Yeah.
Oh, what he does to that kid.
And then Grant traumatizes a little boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he said the claw was retractable and you never see it go in, I don't think.
Well, he didn't know.
That's the thing. Is like, we...
He was wrong.
Like, the amount we know about dinosaurs is probably almost nothing as far as, like, accuracy.
Well, right. A real velociraptor is the size of a chicken, so...
Really?
Really?
Yeah, a real velociraptor are, like, tiny. The dinosaur that's in this movie is closer to what is called a Deinonychus.
Mm-hmm. I love that you know that.
They knew that back then, but Spielberg was like, velociraptor's a cooler sounding name. Let's do
way
that.
Way cooler.
Yeah.
Also, Triceratops is not a real dinosaur, right?
A Triceratops is. Brontosaurus is not. Like, growing up, we all thought Brontosaurus was a thing. But Brontosaurus isn't a real...
These are Brachiosauruses, right?
Correct.
Brachiosaurus is the long neck.
Yeah.
But I thought Brontosaurus had a long neck.
It did, yeah.
But it doesn't exist.
But Brontosaurus, they realized, like, all what we thought were Brontosaurus bones were actually the bones of, like, other things that have different names.
Gotcha. But, I mean, this was kind of the first... Not the first introduction.
Yeah.
But, like, they started talking about how dinosaurs were more similar to birds.
Yeah, that was groundbreaking science in the early 90s was that they were closer to birds than lizards.
Right here in the Chicago Tribune, and now there's no such thing as a Triceratops. Researchers from Montana State University have determined that the beloved three-horned dinosaur wasn't really a distinct genus, but the juvenile version of a Torosaurus. Long believed to be its larger cousin. I've never even fucking heard of a Torosaurus.
Well, Tyrannosaurus sounds so much better.
The article is called Triceratops Beyond Extinct.
Beyond.
So that's sad. First Pluto, then Triceratops.
What the fuck?
And then Pluto's back.
And now dinosaurs have feathers.
Wait, Pluto's back?
I think Pluto's back, right, Steve?
We love Pluto.
I don't know about that.
I'm pretty sure they replanetized Pluto.
I did not hear about Pluto being back.
Is Pluto a planet?
And if they put it back, it was just because they felt the International
Astronomical Union, the IAU, downgraded the status of Pluto to that of a dwarf planet. But it did not meet the three criteria the IAU used to define a full size. It's still a planet. It's a dwarf planet.
It's a dwarf planet.
It's not a full size planet.
Have we identified Planet X yet?
XXX?
Yeah.
Planet triple X.
No, there's apparently a 10th planet in our solar system called Planet X, but no one's really been able to visually spot it, but they know it's out there because
they just feel it. It's in the force.
Kind of. They see things reacting to its gravitational pull.
Mm.
So they know something's out there. But
it could just be Madison's raw sex appeal
out there
in space.
That's the theory I want to put
drawing
forward.
Things.
My gravity is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
You call her fat?
No, the raw sex appeal. Chris.
Your body mass is so large, it has a gravitational pull.
The sex appeal itself has a magnetism.
Magnetism.
That I'm immune to as a podcaster.
I love it.
But everyone else? No chance.
Speaking of Ross.
She's in the back like, rawr, rawr, rawr.
A Tyrannosaur.
Rawr.
Speaking of raw sex appeal.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Dennis Knight. Or Wayne Knight, excuse me. Wayne Knight.
Nedry?
Yeah.
Nedry. What a guy.
Sure.
Love that guy.
Dotson.
Isn't he great in this movie?
He's great. He's smarmy. But then at the most crucial moment, he's a complete bitch. Like, when he goes to execute his plan, he's so confident and whatever the whole time. It's so out of character. Then finally, it's go time. And he's like, I'm like, bro, get it together. You're about to make 1.5 millis, my guy.
Right. Well, he didn't plan for a tropical storm to hit when he was
he's nervous.
He planned 20 minutes. Now he has to get there at 15.
Yeah.
You know?
And then the dude on the other end's like, we gotta go. And if you look at the scene that guy on the phone, like, he's not going to get anywhere in that rain in 15
Hell
minutes. There's no,
no
way.
No, not no through way. The jungle. Especially with, what are they called? The little mean ones that spit acid in your face?
Oh, Dilophosaurus.
Dilophosaurus.
Also a dinosaur that is actually like 20 feet tall in real life.
Really?
Oh. It's way bigger than that.
And they still spit?
No, they're like, yeah, that probably didn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah. I
but
do
that
remember
little,
that not being.
That little head frill, the two little things on its head, that is a part of its skull. So that's real.
Oh, okay.
But the actual, like, they took inspiration from an actual lizard in Australia that does, like, a little frill thing.
Okay.
I do like the frill thing.
A beard? Beard? No.
And that scene was terrifying as a kid.
Blah.
Just the, like,
blah. Oh, yeah, it has the cutest little, like,
did you do the soundbite for that?
Yeah, they called me. I was five.
We need an adorable dinosaur noise.
Gotcha.
So the tropical story is kind of interesting because the movie actually suffered through a hurricane.
Filmed in Kauai, right?
Filmed in Kauai, Hawaii,
oh, okay.
Yep. And
Jimmy's been there.
all of the exterior shots of the movie are there. And they were filming. They were about to leave, I think. They were nearing the end. They're at the end of production there. But then a huge hurricane came, and they were, like, trapped. And they were feverishly trying to, like, or quickly trying to pack up all the gear and props and stuff. And even Jeff Goldblum was helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story that Sam Neill tells where he, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum, like, went on the beach and they could see the storm coming, and it looked like crazy. And Laura Dern's like, "Are we gonna die today?"
Oh my god!
And Sam feels like, We might.
What are you saying we should do?
But
they all look at each other like.
But they ended up like hunkering down and doing a threesome. No, and
doing a threesome.
I do people good. They hunker down. The storm happens. It like destroys the area. They couldn't get back to the States to finish filming because there was like martial law was enacted. You know who saved the day?
Jeff Goldblum.
Kathleen Kennedy.
Wow.
You know, everyone's favorite scapegoat, Kathleen Kennedy, proving once again that she's actually a fucking great producer and people need to shut the fuck up and not be sexist.
If you look at her filmography, it's
stellar.
It's a ridiculous pedigree.
Yeah.
I forget how she got, there was something she did that Steven Spielberg was like, I need her on my team. She's
a boss.
Oh, yeah.
She's a baller.
She's killing it.
Everyone who's like, she ruined my childhood is like, she fucking made your childhood. All right. Like,
yeah,
no, she's a boss ass.
Her
bitch.
Pedigree is incredible. But she literally she called up the pilot.
The hurricane.
She called up the pilot from Raiders.
Down. She said, Mother Nature, don't you fucking dare.
And Mother Nature, she backed down.
Mm-hmm.
She called up the pilot from Raiders of the Lost Ark. You remember the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark when he gets in a plane? He's like, Shock!
Yeah.
There's a snake on the plane.
Sam Jackson popped out. What?
Motherfucker. So that dude apparently was a pilot that happened to be part of the program that was flying in supplies for the efforts of the first aid supplies and everything. And she knew he worked for that company. She called him up and was like, hey, when you fly back, can we ride with you?
Take Laura Dern.
And he's like, sure.
Save Laura Dern. Save everyone else.
Kathleen Kennedy's resourcefulness got them a pilot that was able to get them off the island in an island that was destroyed by a hurricane.
Wow.
And production was able to keep on track because of that.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Right?
It pays to know
unsung
people.
Heroes.
It does. It does.
Pays to know
so
people.
Really, Jurassic Park, thank the pilot from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Dino DNA.
What are your thoughts on Mr. Healy?
I love Mr. Healy.
Mr. Healy?
Whose voice is that?
Oh, let me look it up.
Dino DNA. What a lame...
Why do I feel like I know that?
What a lame ride that would be, though.
Yeah.
Like, if you're at the park and that instead of dinosaurs, you were watching, like, the... I don't give a fuck. Take me to the dinosaurs, man.
Greg Burson is Mr. DNA.
My favorite person,
Greg Burson.
We took the code and filled in the holes.
Yeah, with frogs. It's going to work out fine.
Yeah.
What about the lysine?
We use the frogs that change sex naturally. That's not going to bite us in the ass when we have a park of all female dinosaurs.
But what about the lysine contingency? They could have just not given them. Is that just they got to wait it out and they'll die anyway?
Yeah.
Has that become a plot in the other movies at all? Because that's a huge thing. Somebody's got to be giving them lysine or they're going to die.
The lysine contingency. I think it's one of those things where life found a way and they just don't need lysine anymore.
I adapted. I don't need it. Yeah. I'm a dinosaur.
They evolve in real fucking quick.
That's not how evolution works. But yeah. But life do be finding a way.
It do be finding ways.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the book is interesting. It's very different. Like Madison said, it's much more violent. John Hammond's like an absolute prick.
Piece of shit.
He dies in the book.
Oh.
He gets, oh,
I do remember
spoiler
that.
Spoiler alert for the novelization of Jurassic Park. John Hammond gets eaten by Compsognathuses.
Ah, hate when that happens.
The little compies from the second movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because
commies, commies
take in. They're like, we hate your capitalistic future of science. I think Muldoon lives.
I wish he did.
The lawyer,
the hunter,
the lawyer lives. A lot of people live.
Girl.
The lawyer lives. Henry Wu gets eaten by raptors, so he wouldn't go on into the
sequels. BD Wong.
BD Wong's character gets eaten. I think
the Sam Jackson's character die every time.
Yeah, he dies every time. Oh. Yep. He dies every time. Nedry dies the same way.
Sattler's so relieved too. Oh, he's
Mr.
here.
Arnold. I love her realization because she turns around and she's like, she does this weird like, oh God, it's an arm.
It's an arm.
And the raptors just put it in the closet. Yeah. How nice of them.
Try to hide the body.
Trick her.
They eat him. They're like, guys, get a mop. We got to mop it up. What are we going to do with this arm?
In here.
My favorite thing I've never really thought about is when it's at the end of the movie, they're running from the raptors and it's when they first go up into the ceiling of the lobby or whatever. The ceiling of wherever they're at to I think the control room to get away from the raptors.
Yeah.
Grant goes up last. And then as the raptor's coming up, he kicks the ladder away because he's scared they're going to up the ladder. I'm like, stop.
But they are opening doors and shit. I would too.
He's like,
Which is really funny because, yes, he kicks down the ladder, but then they have that shot of the raptor look at it, and then the raptor looks up like, hey!
I was going to come up there.
I was going to do that.
Like, I don't think that would even support a raptor. Like, there's a balance.
Well, it's like, how the fuck? I get it. I mean, I would have kicked it down, too, but, like, how the fuck would they, like, grab it and, like, just shimmy it?
Oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
It's they like ripping with the nails. Enough, really. With the one nail, it's just, like, hooking on the ladder to get up.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Silliness. Please.
What are some other silly things that happen in the movie?
One of the things, if I was going to pick something to say I don't like that, it's so dumb, but it's the fact that both Sattler and Tim have the same issue where one of their legs gets injured for tension reasons, for plot reasons. And I don't know why, I don't even know how Timmy hurt his leg in that kitchen scene. It's just out of nowhere.
Oh, it's probably because he fell 50 feet off of a electric fence.
But he's fine.
He was fine to walk up and eat the buffet of food.
Yeah, he's fine until...
I thought he was limping at that, too.
Maybe he twisted his ankle in the freezer on the ice or something. I mean,
I
missed it.
There's a lot of leg injury in this movie.
It's, for obvious reasons, it's just scarier that they're slow.
Yeah.
But I don't think you even need to do that because the raptors are so fast. Mm-hmm. It's scary enough trying to get away with both your legs. Like, Timmy could have full sprinted ran for the door with the raptor chasing him. That would have been scary enough without him.
A little bit along.
That's the only moment where I'm like, I don't know why you did the leg thing again. I just did the leg thing.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's
a little silly.
It's like 80s slasher. She can't get away from Michael Myers because she's twisted
also,
her ankle.
If you're doing a shot of, you know, people running away, like the limping of the leg is definitely more dramatic.
Yeah.
Fast forward to Jurassic World, full sprinting in high heels away from the T-Rex.
That's I remember watching that and being like, that's not how that would go.
No, she mothered that.
She would. She would be tripping everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, she did it. I watched
it. She did
it.
Do it. Yeah.
Queen.
I'm
not Jessica Chastain. For Christ's sakes, I'm Ron Howard's fucking daughter. You heard that song?
No.
Really?
No.
So there's this whole thing where people confuse Bryce Dallas Howard for Jessica Chastain all the time because red hair. Mm-hmm. And she came on a late night talk show and they made a song. I am not Jessica Chastain. For Christ's sakes, I'm Ron Howard's fucking daughter. It's so funny. Really good. That's good. A great actress, by the way.
I love
both great
and
actresses.
A great director.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I wonder where she got that talent. Nepo baby.
Nepo baby. I wanted to ask you guys, so the end of the movie, so I watched this movie technically this morning really early at like 2:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And I got
Were
to
you
the,
up all night?
I was up all night. I got to the point where the kids were in the kitchen and for some reason I was like, oh, there's like a lot more of this movie left. And then I clicked in. I was like, oh, there's like 20, 25 minutes left. So I think my only weird quirk with this movie is that it builds up so big at the end and then it just ends. Like, I don't know. There wasn't much of a come down from, you know, the welcome center. And then they immediately get on the plane and then they leave and then the movie ends. That's kind of my only thing.
That's how to do it, baby. You get the fuck out.
Oh, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Get in and get out.
I guess for me, I just was like, oh, my initial thought expectation was, oh, there's going to be an additional like something
else.
The
real Jurassic Park were the friends we made along the way.
Exactly.
You wanted it to fade back in Peter Jackson style.
Yeah, you think it's the
I
don't ending.
Know. I think
it's the threesome. Like, it's just, it's Ian Malcolm and Grant and Sattler in a bed.
And that's chaos. Mm-hmm. Life found a way.
Found a way. Yeah, I don't. It was just. It's not that big of a deal, but I remember being like, "Oh, that was just kind of jarring for me to it for it to just kind of like end like that." But
it is a little jarring to go from the big T-Rex triumphant like when dinosaurs were the world,
then
mm-hmm. like it is a little bit of a. Little whiplash there.
And they all died in a helicopter ride trying to escape.
And then the helicopter blew up.
Yeah. I do want to say, like, this movie, I think, is another example of, like, picture-perfect pacing.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's 2 hours long. Feels like, for me at least, it feels like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it just goes.
Maybe that's what I was experiencing. So I was like, oh, yeah, there's definitely more. And then there's only 20 minutes. So I was like, oh.
It's the rewatchability of it, you know? There's something hooking you every time. It's a damn fine picture. That's all I can say.
And I always forget about the opening sequence of them introducing the Velociraptor and kind of like the more almost the prompted of why there needs to be experts on the island because somebody does die and they need, you know, whatever. But that's a very good opening sequence. And I think why we allude to, you know, Steven Spielberg diving into horror a little bit because that scene is very disturbing.
Yeah.
And the close-up of shooter. Yeah.
I just want to say
the David Kep script, baby.
In that scene, you see all the Jurassic Park workers. They're wearing like the blue jumpsuits with the orange helmets. They're very serious. They've got the stun guns. They're ready to go.
Which and we then, never see them again.
Full stun.
Well, they're on the boat, baby. They're getting ready to celebrate having a job, which they will definitely have when they get back to that cruise.
Yeah.
But then you see Robert Muldoon, who's just like, I'm just doing an Outback guy. Yeah. I'm not wearing short shorts. Sign me up.
Yeah.
I kind of wish everyone.
Thighs out, baby.
I wish they went one way or the other. Either Muldoon also wears the uniform or everyone else has to wear short shorts.
Jeff Goldblum for a second.
I did. I forgot what the word for uniform was. And my brain was rebooting.
The legs find a way.
Find a way.
Find a way.
That's right.
Yeah. And what a good. The opening is just because it's the John Williams score has the like that almost like T-Rex stomp like thump.
Yeah.
And they needed to do that because they don't actually bring the dinosaurs in triumphantly for another, you know, 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
At least. And so but they got that. They got you hooked. Like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Another thing that's in the book that is absent of this movie is another reason why there's a whole security issue is because dinosaurs are getting off of the island and making their way to Costa Rica. Like there's I remember one of the things I remember the most about the book, because it's probably the scariest, creepiest scene, is there's a Costa Rican family and they have like there's a I think it's a mother and she has like an infant child. And she puts the infant child to bed and the child's crying, but she walks away, but then the child stops crying. And then when they go back into the room, there's a Compsognathus like eating the child's face and it like runs out the window. And I remember like just the visual on the page was like, ooh, that's terrifying. I wonder if that's in the movie. And it wasn't.
I can't imagine that making the movie.
No.
Right. Which is why in The Lost World Jurassic Park, that movie opens up with a child getting attacked by compies, because that's like a big thing that happened
Easter
in the
egg-y.
Book.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be terrible. Glad it wasn't in there. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. I think that guy still got eaten by raptors, too. Because the book's like, let's fucking rip people apart, everybody. Get in here. Yeah.
Good.
As they should.
I think the T-Rex kicks Dr. Grant at one point in the book. Like,
really?
Yeah, there's a point.
Like, get out of here.
There's a point where it's a raft scene where they somehow find a raft and they're going down the river and the T-Rex chases them in the river. And so the T-Rex is like halfway in the water. But at one point, the T-Rex like kicks Dr. Grant. He has like a big like scratch or something because the T-Rex kicked him for the rest of the book.
I bet.
Yeah.
You at least have a flesh wound from a T-Rex kick.
Yeah.
No, a T-Rex punch wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, T-Rex punch. We'll get you.
T-Rex uppercut.
And you just put your hand on the T-Rex's head. And stop it.
Punch it in the nose so like big. A shark.
Oh, oh. That's my raptor noise.
That's a good
when
one.
They call to each other. It's kind of hard because it's all throat, you know?
I'm Madison, not even going to
your
try.
Turn.
Come on.
Ah!
Ha 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 ha! It's hard to do.
Raptor.
Yeah, it's the Pokemon version.
Yep.
Well, I think we're wrapping up, right? I think we're out of time.
I think we're out of time, baby.
Thank you so much for choosing that movie. Thank you so much for listening to the show, for going back to the park with us. We tried to spare no expense on this episode. That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Kit.
My name's Madison.
And I'm Steve.
And we've got to go return some videotapes. Happy streaming.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.